I want to welcome Steph to the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is our Inside Your Mind segment, and Steph is here to get inside your mind.
Inside your mind.
You often are at pains to explain that you're not here to mess with people's heads.
No. No, but I do like ringing people up and saying, hello, it's Stephanie here from Inside Your Mind.
You want a little echo sound.
Yeah, that's right. Little echo sound on the end.
Yeah. So today we want to talk about values, because Steph actually helped the station out recently with something. We're about to go through a review of our strategy, because our strategy is quite old, and we thought we were looking at our mission statement and thinking about having like a common basis for the decision making that's going to happen amongst the people who are involved with the station over the next few months, and needing to work out what the station's values are.
Mm.
And because at the moment, in some ways it's easy, because I'm just the manager, I'm really the only staff member, and so I just go and do things. And I've obviously got some values, and I think they're the station values, but we've never really thought deeply about it. But as soon as you start getting a group of people making decisions together, sometimes you end up having debates about things, and no one really knows why they disagree. And it can be a little bit of a, I don't think this was going to happen, but at times it can be a bit of a power move to figure out who wins, rather than actually getting to the bottom of what's important.
Yeah.
So Steph has a thing that's called a values elicitation, and she elicited our values.
Sounds painful, doesn't it? It's like pulling teeth. Elicited your teeth.
A little bit it is like pulling teeth, because one of the things that you explained is that our values exist and sort of not quite at a fully conscious level.
That's right.
We can kind of work them out if we think about it, but we're often not that conscious of them.
No, I think they are. I mean, when I first started working with values, which was, 20-odd years ago more, people would go, well, I don't even know what that is. But now a lot more people are aware of values, even if they don't know what their values are. But because they're kind of just outside your conscious awareness, sometimes we realise what one of them is when somebody contravenes it, and then we get really angry about something, and that often is an indication that that is value for us.
Yeah.
Which is not the best way to find out what your values are.
It is a way. I think sometimes people feel a little bit cynical when you say values, because there's corporations that say these are our values, like big companies say these are our values.
I have them written on the wall or something, engraved in stone.
Yeah, something like that. And we feel a bit cynical about that.
Yeah, because people often don't behave in alignment with those values, so they say one thing and doing something different.
So my old boss, who told me that it was a family company but wanted us to come in on the weekends for no extra pay,
right?
he probably wasn't living in alignment with those values,
no,
and he wasn't letting us live in alignment with those values either.
No.
Yeah,
and that's the thing, is that when you know what your values are, if you know what somebody else's values are, then you know you can. If they're not behaving in alignment with those values, then you can challenge them on the fact that, you know, you said this, but this is what you're doing. I don't quite understand it, because, you know, I know that this is really important to you, and yet this is what you're doing, and it's at odds with it.
Yeah.
And so that is a lot more powerful than saying to somebody, why did you do blah, 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 you know?
Right.
Because you're really questioning then their integrity.
It doesn't always pay to question your boss's integrity to their face.
That's what I mean. You say it in that way.
I'm a little confused. Can you help me out?
Because this is what our values are, and then this is what's happened. I'm just a bit confused. Am I missing the point here or something?
Yeah. So I was trying to remember, like, we got through the process. This can be an all-day thing that you do with some organisations.
Sometimes more than a day.
Yeah. We had 3 hours, and we got... We started off people just like naming some values, just throwing values at the page.
Yeah, just like single words mainly, weren't they?
Yeah. And then we tried to group those up, and then you kind of end up choosing one of the values out of the group to be the headline value, but you kind of keep the rest there as the subtext in a way. That's what we seem to do. And I'm off the top of my head, I'm not sure I can remember all five, but... it's important to remember that fun was one of the values for the station.
Right.
Yeah. Community focus, obviously, another one.
Yeah.
We wanted to use... We got stuck around the word independent because we thought that contradicted the community focus.
Right.
So I think we went for autonomous to explain that we are independent. There's no government or corporate institution that has control over us.
Right, and funding you or anything.
So we are, we do completely get to make our own decisions about how we're organised. That's actually really important to us.
Yeah.
And produces a very, very different result too.
Yeah.
You compare us to other stations. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So those were three of them that I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't got the...
And I've written it all up. I wrote it up, but I haven't got it all in my head. And I'm scared to try in case I get it wrong. But
I think it might be useful for people to know some more about values. And so they're heart-based rather than logical.
Right.
So, you know, so you can't sort of go nut it out and go, okay, well, this is a value. You can make a value up, and then as long as you behave in alignment with it, it'll become part of who you are.
Yeah.
It takes a while. But they're heart-based, not logical and head-based. So they're often, you know, emotional things around them as well. So, you know, I just took a photograph of some ones that we'd had from a few years ago when I was running a course with some friends.
A photo of a list. You can't actually photograph values.
No, sorry, photograph of a list, that's right.
They're invisible. They're invisible, Steph.
They're invisible, that's right.
No, Steph's so good at this now, she can see them. She can see them like auras.
So we were running a course called Futures by Design, where we were helping people who were either wanted to change career or they might have lost their job through redundancy and were wondering, you know, like, what next? And so we do. Part of that was to elicit their values.
Yeah.
And so I've got a list of some of the ones. So these are ones that people have told us because, as I said off air, sometimes people work with, like, cards that have just got words on.
Yeah.
But the problem with just words is that there's a whole lot underneath that word, and words can have several different meanings, you know. So some of the work values that people come up with is recognition, for example. So they want to feel recognised. Having responsibility. Some people, it's like they have to work outdoors. Some people like to be on the go. Some people teamwork. Some people like big picture work. We've got, I'll just pull a couple out here. Working with words or working with data or working with animals.
Are those values? They sound like...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, somebody who likes working with words, for example, might not like to work with data, and they go, oh, I couldn't do that job, you know, couldn't sit there and count numbers or you know,
yeah,
chew numbers all day. What else have we got? But some people have got leadership. They want to be in a leadership role. Respect, making a difference. So, you know, they want to be making a difference in not just in the company but in the world or in the community or whatever, you know. So
making a profit might not matter to them, but making a difference might.
That's right, yeah. And yeah. See, the thing is with making a difference, so we've got three words there, and we're making a difference. But what does making a difference mean? It's just a few words, and it can mean so many different things to so many different people.
Well, Hitler made a difference.
Yeah, he did. And so you have to be able to drill down on it, and that's the important part. So some relationship values have got attraction, sense of humour, shared interests, loyalty, independence, companionship, affection, communication, good sex, positive attitudes, shared goals, trust, respect, honesty. So just those ones, love, trust, respect and honesty. So those, again, are interesting words. What do they actually mean? Like, I've worked with couples where it's usually the woman at the top of the list, she has love, right? And then I've worked with the guy and he doesn't have love on his list, right? And then go, okay, we're going to share them now.
And you're thinking, uh-oh.
No, because I've done it so many times. And so I go, and so the woman goes, well, you haven't even got love on your list. And he goes, well, if I have all those, I have love.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean, you see. The words themselves, they're just words. We have to find out what's underneath those words. That's what's important. And that's where we look at what does it actually mean to you, whatever the word is, whatever the value word is. And then how do you know you have that? What would you see and hear and feel that would let you know that you had it?
Right.
And what behaviours would you engage in that would let other people know that that was a value for you?
So if they both had love, they still could have had really different definitions of what that would look like.
Yeah.
In fact, that's very common.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the last part then is like, why is that value important to you? And then we asked that. Well, I asked that three times after, so they might say, I don't know. Let's pick one. Why? Well, I won't get with love. Why is companionship? I don't know. Why is companionship important to you? And then the person might say, well, it's because it means that we can, you know, do things together and experience the adventure of life. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And then you go, okay, so why is doing things together and going through an adventure of life together important to you?
Right? Yeah.
And then they'll answer that one. And then you go on that answer, you say, and why is that important to you? And it's then like, you get a deeper and deeper answer. And sometimes people get really emotional because they hadn't realised why that particular value is important.
Well, when you asked for us, we went through that process with the fun value.
Right.
And the question is, why fun? And we went going deeper and deeper, and then we came up with, well, one of the things at one level was that fun is an essential part of the human experience. Like, you're not living a whole life if you're not having fun. And then we went from there, I think, to so it's actually good for the well-being of the community. Right.
Yeah.
And then we're at community station. So I don't know at what level we stopped, but we stopped eventually. It's a bit like an annoying child having these questions, I've got to say. But it does force you to, yeah, to dig deep.
Yeah, and it's less easy with a group than it is with an individual. Although with an individual, you know, you can see people and they're really digging into the heart to figure out what, come up with the answer.
Yeah.
To why is this important, you know.
And one of the things I realize, you're talking about relationships, but there's a next level when you have a relationship and then you have kids.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden at that point you discover there's a car over the road with two dogs in it that are going berserk at another dog walking past. It's very distracting for me. This has been integrated with the community as a radio station. We're community focused here. So you get to having kids and then you discover that you actually had quite different values around raising kids.
Yeah, that's right.
And that happens a lot.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm working with people, you know, they're going to have a family. Okay, what are your values around relationships? Because, not relationships, raising a family, because sometimes people go, well, you know, I want to raise my children how I was raised, but they never sort of say how that was.
Right.
And then the other person might be thinking, God, there's no way I'm going to raise my kids how I was raised.
Yeah.
And again, they don't say what that means.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that they can be on two different paths, you know, and the kids are just confused.
Yeah.
Or they learn to manipulate the parents to get what they want because they pick up what's important to the parents.
And there's something about parenting too that, like you talked earlier about when you discover something's against a value of yours, it can make you quite angry.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot around parenting. And there's and there's one particular difference. There's one where that says kids should do what they're told,
mm-hmm.
and then
children should be seen and not heard.
Yeah, which is a little bit. The people don't say that anymore, but the kids should definitely do what they're told is definitely still out there.
Right.
But then the kind of opposite to that is that kids need the chance to learn from the world.
Mm.
You know, that, like for me personally, that's actually a really strong value, that I shouldn't be directing them all the time how they're going to learn.
Mm.
You know, how they're going to learn to be in the world. So those are two really opposite values, and you'd really, if you're a couple and you've got that level of difference in values, it's probably going to be unworkable unless someone changes their value. I would say, does that happen? Can that happen?
Yeah, you know, like sometimes I see parents that are having problems with their children, and usually what they're doing is a lot of the time trying to bring the children up in a different way to the way they were brought up. And often it's around, it's kind of like the kids are just allowed to do whatever they like without any sense of responsibility. And so, you know, they get to like 15, 16 and the kids are running riot and, you know, they're not helping out at home or doing anything. And so, and then the parents are like, it's usually the mother, like, I don't know what to do. And so I usually say to them, okay, and I think I've mentioned this on air before, at what age is a child an adult? And they'll say, oh, well, you know, sometimes it's 18, sometimes it's 21, sometimes it's when they finished university, sometimes it's when they leave home. Although that could be sometimes people are 35 before they leave home.
These days, it's, yes, yeah. Financially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So whatever they say is the age of an adult, I go, okay, and then how do you want them to be when they're an adult? You know, what qualities would you like to see in them? And they go, well, I want them to be responsible. I want them to be, you know, good members of the community. I want them to be independent and all that. And you go, okay. So we're writing all these down. And sometimes I might say, what does that mean? Like, what does independent mean? What does responsible mean? And then I go, okay, so what are you doing now to make sure that when they're 18, say, that they have all these qualities? Because it's not like the fairy visits them on the eve of their 18th birthday, waves a magic wand, and suddenly they're responsible, independent, and all of these things that you want. You have to, you know, imbue that in them. You know, like, and I go, like, for example, do they do things around the house? Oh, no, I do everything. And I go, okay, so what are you then? How are they going to be independent? How are they going to be in a relationship when they don't even know how to boil an egg or get the vacuum cleaner out?
Well, the thing,
you know, and they go, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Right, okay.
See, one
you're
of
just
the,
setting them up for failure in every relationship that they're in.
But one of the things that people forget is that you're also modelling values.
Mm.
So if you want your kids to have those values and you've got them, then even if they're not visible when they're 15, they will emerge later in life. Like when they are out on their own, running their own lives, you'll just see them emerge. But if you say you want your kids to have those values and you're not living them, then that's a different story.
Mm.
And it's that model. The modelling is way more powerful than we think. We think what we tell our kids is what decides how they turn out, but our modelling is probably more important.
Mm.
Yeah, and so then living integrity with your own values becomes important.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing then is, like, again, if those values are going to come out later on, it's like, when, you know, because you really want to see it before they leave home. I would think.
Well, you want to, but
so then it would be like, how can you, you know, like sometimes people think that doing chores around home is like a punishment or something, rather than
which used as a punishment often.
Yeah, if it's used as a punishment, but if it's just like this is how our family works. And, you know, we all have to contribute. So, for example, when I was growing up, we've got, you know, mum and dad, four kids under five. I mean, we weren't always under five, but we grew up, you know. But it was like a mum worked part-time and dad worked, obviously, full-time. So it was like, okay, when you get home, you know, can you peel the spuds for dinner? You know, can you dust? Can you have the vacuum cleaner around? Can you whatever? So we all had just a job to do, and it didn't take, like, lots of time. But it was like that was what kept the house going, because it wasn't a huge house and there were six people in it, you know. So it was instilled in us that we have to take responsibility even from a young age for whatever it is that's happening in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I feel that's like a value for you, the way you talk about it, that's one of your values.
Mm.
Yeah, that's come through there. There's other values that we hear. Politicians are quite good at using values without making it clear that that's what they're doing. So,
can you give me an example?
Well, there's conservative politicians who talk about standards or excellence,
right.
And that doesn't resonate with me because I don't feel like I know what that means.
No.
But you were saying to me off there that standards isn't really a value,
no.
But it must be an indicator of a value. For it to resonate, because it does really resonate with some people, I notice.
Mm.
Standards and excellence, you hear those words and it seems to really resonate with people. But what is,
well,
or do we need one of them here to ask the question, or can you stand in, answer the question,
well,
what's behind the value?
I think standards and excellence are those words, it's like, I mean, nothing really. Like, what?
But it must indicate something,
it
right?
It indicates something, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, again, like any of the other words that we've got there, but people understand those a bit more generally.
Yeah.
So, like, what is excellence? Because excellence could be one thing to one person, something completely different to somebody else.
Actually, this makes sense because it's politicians saying,
yeah,
it.
Exactly. So they're particularly vague.
Yes.
In the way they talk. You know,
yeah.
You can listen to a politician for 5 minutes if you're not asleep. And they talk in really vague language
yeah.
that sends you into a trance. the more vague your language, the easier it is to go into a trance.
And that's actually how people put people into trance, like, professional exactly. hypnotists.
Yeah, that's what I do when I'm training people. I have a relaxation thing in the morning.
Yeah.
I just talk about how, you know, you're all here now and you're listening to the sound of my voice and you might notice how your body feels right at this moment and, you know, you might notice how more relaxed you are now than you were even a couple of minutes ago. So, and this is the same language, not the same words, but the same type of language that politicians use.
Yeah.
Very vague. And so to get yourself out of that trance, you have to ask questions like, well, what the hell is a standard? What does that mean?
Yeah.
What standard are we talking about? And whose standard and when and how?
And is the politician following them?
Yeah. And then it's like, okay, and then they go off on another tangent because they can't answer it. And same with excellence.
Yeah. I mean, to me, if you say excellence, I think, well, that must mean doing your job properly or doing whatever the thing is you're doing it well.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's almost like...
I nearly said doing it to a high standard.
But yeah, it could be, another word is like, oh, perfection. But again, it's like perfection is another thing that's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, no politician goes out and say they want to see perfection though, do they?
No, but it's a similar kind of concept in as much as it's hard to define and it's going to be different for each person.
Yeah. I wonder what it's... Because some people get really attached to those words.
Oh, they do, because value words are like anchors. They're like they anchor them into something that's important to them. So if they'll say like a word that often people use, oh, you know, I just want freedom.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that's great. You want freedom. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, defining it or helping them to define it for themselves what freedom actually means. But we use the word freedom and we've all got a concept of what it means, but we don't know exactly what it means for each person because it's just one word. Well, it's kind of like an iceberg, and at the top of the iceberg you've got this label like freedom, and underneath, which is the majority of the iceberg, is all the things about what it means. And how do you know you've got it? And why is it important? And why is that important? And then why is that important? That's all the stuff that's underneath that's usually below the conscious awareness.
Mm.
And it has to ask the questions and then allow the person thinking time. So, you know, when I'm doing a values elicitation with somebody, it typically takes between an hour and a half and 3 hours.
Yeah.
A long time.
With an individual.
With an individual.
Yeah.
With a group, it takes longer because we have to go through what each word means and make sure everybody's on the same page like we did with the radio last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Something else I was going to say about that. It's gone out of my head. Carry on.
I want to know what... I'm still intrigued by this use of standards and excellence as a touchstone for values because people react like they're values, but like you say, they're really vague. Mm. The use of freedom, like when people started talking about freedom here with the anti-mandate movement,
mm-hmm.
and I was surprised to see the word freedom being used like that because I'd always associated that with American stuff, like Americans are always banging on about freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a big value, a big cultural value mm-hmm. for the US, but it tends to get used, it feels like it gets used in a bad way somehow or other. I don't know how to explain that, but I was just surprised. I guess I never like it when I hear an American value coming over here,
right.
but maybe that was just my interpretation of the word freedom being used as a rallying cry. And, right. and for the people who were following that rallying cry, they might have meant something different.
Well, yeah, because it is a word. And if it's not defined, then people go, oh, yeah, freedom, freedom, and then... What exactly does it mean? We're all following the same word, but we might have different interpretations of it.
Yeah.
So...
it's an echo chamber out there. Stuart's still here. He's going to close the door for us.
Stuart. what was I going to say? Going back to values then, if people want to define their own values...
Yeah,
I've got a quite a lengthy article on the website. I'll just pull my phone up again and tell you where it is.
Oh. We've also got a dog in the studio. We're just trying to. Usually, the dog just sits still.
Where are we? Okay.
So Steph's going
to
bring up.
So you go to insideyourmind.com and it's called How to Define Your Values to Get a Better Job. But it doesn't really matter whether it's a job or if it's a relationship. It's the same process. Or you can just go to insideyourmind.com and search for values, and I think it's the first one to come up.
So how do you find out what, given how hard it is to actually pin down values quickly, if you're applying for a job and you go to your potential employers and you try to suss out what their values are, I mean, if you ask them what their values are, you might not get an accurate answer.
Right.
Is what I'm thinking, because they might not be able to give one, you know.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of companies now have the values on their websites, so you can do a bit of research before you go. And then you can ask some questions around, you know, like if, for example, one of your values is flexibility.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, like for me, sometimes means working till 2 o'clock in the morning and then, you know, having a couple of hours at the beach on another day, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But that's not going to necessarily work in a company. But you want to find that out. But again, if we're using the same word, flexibility, they might go, oh, yeah, we've got flexibility here. You know, you can, and then you say you turn up at, you know, 11 o'clock one morning after working till 3 the morning before. And they go, where have you been? And you go, well, I've just been at the beach. Why? They go, well, I thought flexibility was important. Yeah, well, yeah, it is. You can start at 8 or 8:30.
But they'd actually get angry if you turned up at 11 and said you'd been at the beach, and the fact that you'd been up at 3 the night before, they'd probably get really angry about that because it's a values thing. Yeah.
So this is where it has to be defined. So, you know, when you're in an interview, you would see if you can figure out what's important. You know, you tell them what's important to you, or they might ask you what's important to you and why that is. And then decide from there whether that company suits – is going to suit you. So I think I mentioned this on the workshop that we had for the radio station about values. I had a guy see me quite a few years ago. He had 3 jobs in a year, and he worked in, I can't remember now, it was kind of like a data or computers or something. It was quite a high-level job. And he said, I think there's something wrong with me. I've had these 2 jobs, and 3 jobs. And I said, okay, so... there's, you know, often the first thing we look at is, if we're not happy, is our environment. Like, oh, I don't like working, you know, in a room with lots of equipment around me, or I don't like working inside, or I don't like working outside, or I don't like, you know, I don't like my house or something, you know. And then, so we'll change that. The next level then is, what are we actually doing? Are we doing work that we love, or is it just going through the motions, for example? And then the next level after that is, you know, are we using all our skills, and are we gaining new skills? Competency, it's often called. So those ones are all within our conscious awareness. And so what happens if we change jobs and we go, oh, it sort of seemed like an ideal place. It was, the environment was good. You know, I was using my skills. I was developing. I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
Then it's usually values, because they're just outside conscious awareness. So I said to this guy, you know, okay, I think it might be an issue with his values and, you know, your values conflicting with the company or vice versa. So I elicited just the values, the key words to start with. And I said to him, right, I said, here you go. These are the words that you've come up with. How many of those have you got in this job? And he looked down the list and he said, oh, 2.5 out of 8. Right,
yeah.
And I go, okay, how many did you have in the last job? And he looked again and he said, oh, maybe 2. And the first one was 3 or something like that. And I go, that's why you're not happy. Because your values are not being met with the company compared to what your values are. So then we did the whole thing with the values. I think we did 2 sessions on it. And then he got a job that he absolutely loved. And it was fine. And the values of the company matched his. And he was really happy.
I feel like the cynic in me saying, isn't the value of every company just to make money?
Well, some of them aren't there to make money, are they? Some of them are charities.
Well, okay, true. We are. Yeah.
is that your value to make money?
No. But I've been in that environment. I remember sitting in the Monday morning meetings and the bosses are revving us up and I'm thinking, I really can't get into this.
Right.
I can't I'm not excited about working real hard all week to make them money.
Right, right.
You know, and that I don't know if is that even that's not even a value. That in some ways that's just a reality.
Well, for some, again, it's like what does so. Let's say the value is profitability.
Yeah.
So what does profitability means? It means we're making money. Okay. It means we're making money. We're making more money than we're spending. For example, okay. And so then, why is that important? So some people will say, well, that's important because if it's a profitable business, it means that we're successful, okay? And if it's successful, why is that important? And they go, because that might mean that I can employ more people. Okay, and if you can employ more people, why is that important? Because then I can make sure that those people are safe and secure and they can support their families.
Right.
So, and somebody else might say something completely different. Right.
Yeah, well, there might be their personal security as a business owner.
Yeah.
And that is always it's like you talk about sometimes values become gain a higher priority at various stages in life. If you've just started a business, you know, personal security is going to be up in your face, really. That's just what's natural. That's what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that.
When people have lost their job through redundancy or something like that, often security is number one on the list, you know, because there is a hierarchy. But I was just thinking about one of the guys that when I worked at the power company, I employed him as an apprentice, and he's now got several companies, and you know, he's often on LinkedIn, and they do such a lot in the community, and started a foundation to help ADHD kids and all that kind of stuff, you know, and. And then he won a leadership award last year. So, you know, it's not necessarily, profit is not necessarily evil.
Yeah.
It depends on, again, what it actually means to the person and the organisation.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be really, really useful because if we didn't have profitable businesses, then, you know, well, we'd all just grind to a halt.
Well, yeah, they've actually got to succeed. Yes, bare minimum. But,
Imagine if it wasn't important at all, and then they all went bankrupt, and everybody lost their jobs, and you know, went down the plug hole, went south.
But I definitely this employer, or two employers I'm thinking of, two bosses, two partners of the firm, I definitely didn't have a good values match with them,
right?
At all,
right?
Yeah, and I only lasted a year.
Yeah, and see, this is what happens. You feel it. People feel there's something wrong. You know, that's not a match, and they usually can't figure it out. And that's when I see them, and I usually know that it's not at those three levels of the environment or the behaviour or what they actually do.
But it's expressed as that person's not very good at their job. That's how it comes out. They're not very good, and they need to go. And
well, they probably haven't thought it through either.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is with any company that's starting up, in my mind, that's the first thing they should do. Like this company that I had with that I just read those values out. That it's called Futures by Design. So it was myself and two other NLP trainers, and we decided that we'd start this this course. It was just a course, really. First thing we did was identified what our values were.
Yeah.
For working together and how we're going to do that.
And if they'd been really quite different, would you have abandoned the project?
Absolutely.
Right.
And sometimes I even do. You know, if somebody offers me some work. And I'm not too sure. I'll look at my values and go, is this going to fit? Is this company going to fit with me? And in the past, when I was first starting out, people would say, oh, can you do this for us? And I'd have a gut feel that it wasn't right, and I'd just do it.
Yeah.
And then it was always a disaster. You know, I was not happy doing it.
So you're only doing it for the money ultimately because
at that point, I think. And then I went, what? You've got these values. Why aren't you looking at them? I mean, you know, the gut feel that's telling you not to do something is usually based on your values because it's an emotional thing.
Yeah.
And so then you can go back if you've got them written out, like I've got them at the front of my diary, you know, because so they can go unconscious again, and you've got to make sure that you're living in alignment with your own values as well, you know, so that you're behaving in a way that people go, oh, yeah, well, that's important to her, you know.
Yeah, I was a good boy. I did what I was told, and I did what was expected. I didn't need to be told what to do. I was such a good boy. I knew what to do before anyone told me.
Right.
So I went off to university and studied and got a job and all that, and 5 years in, and I'm like, this is really not working. This is not really not working for me. And I ended up working for myself, actually, ironically, which was like from the outside, I might look like I'm unemployable in the sense that I couldn't work for other people. But it probably was that I was not in an environment where the values were resonating.
And I think the other thing is, like, for some people, I have independence as a value, and which is okay. You know, there's jobs where you can be independent to a certain level. It's again a matter of specifying what it actually means. Because if it means that you can just do your own thing, then that might not work well in an organisation. But if you specify it and it will work in an organisation, that's fine. So that's why the words themselves are just words on paper. It's really digging down to what's underneath it that's important, so that you know and you can explain it to somebody.
Yeah, because we, like for the radio station, independent was one of those words that came up, and we didn't want to make it a headline value because there were too many implications about like being alone or isolated from it, and that's the complete opposite of being community focused.
Right.
So, but our structural independentism, or the power to run ourselves the way that we think is appropriate, is huge for us.
Yeah.
So autonomy.
And again, if an organisation has that as a value, then what, you know, how does that impact the people that work in the organisation?
Yeah.
What's expected of them if the organisation's independent? How do they fit in and contribute to that?
The independence does flow through. So when a new DJ comes in and I talk to them, I say to them that you create your own show.
Mm-hmm.
The only rules are follow the Broadcasting Act, which is about swearing after 8:30 and a few other things.
Right.
No swearing before 8:30.
Swearing before 8:30.
In the evening.
Oh, not in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit grey in the sense that the expectations of the listeners play a part of that as well. I don't want to get too distracted by that, though. But, you know, it's kind of like you obey that and don't burn the place down, you know.
Okay. That's pretty general, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and everyone laughs and goes, yeah, of course, you know, which means take care of the place. But yeah, the point is that you do get to create your own thing. So in the sense that the station as an organisation is independent and autonomous, the DJs are mostly as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are rules. There's rules about how to behave, and, you know, because there were times when DJs got in fights with each other 20 years ago, and things like that, right? Like, not very often, but it was enough that someone made a rule about it.
Right.
But in terms of actually when you're being a DJ making a show or a podcast, it's entirely up to you to create your own thing.
Right.
And that ability to do that, to express yourself, I think is an important value for the station.
So that fits in with the value of independence as a radio station as well.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that we ignore the community at all. So there have been a couple of times there's been people who've done things that I know that are going to upset the community.
Right.
And I just kind of have a quiet chat. Just say that's not going to go down well here.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
kind of a heads up, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a kind of example of where, you know, about everybody knowing what the values are, it means you're all in sync, you know, and you're going to attract people that want that independence to do their own radio shows without interference.
Yeah.
The opposite of that would be somebody that, you know, you've got to come in and hold the hand, and, you know, they're ringing you up every 5 minutes to see if they can do this or do that or do the other thing, you know.
I know, and I think it can be quite jarring to people when they come in and I'm saying to them, well, what do you want to do? But I had that. I rang up, those days they had a day manager, I think it was Susa Cooper, who was working at Extreme at the time, and she was like, so what do you want to do? And I'm like, aren't you going to tell me? Like, I knew what I wanted to do, but I thought there was going to be some kind of guidelines.
Yeah. And again, you see, that's an interesting thing. So for some people, they like lots of rules and kind of supervision.
Yeah.
And other people, you know, like I had a whole lot of people working for me that were like that when I worked in the power company. And I'm the opposite. So, you know, I think I've mentioned this before. We did this thing called a work styles profile, which I still use sometimes, and it tells you different aspects of your kind of your personality and your work style. And one of the things it measures is your need. It was called need for rules and supervision.
Right.
And each of these were on a scale of 0 to 9, and it was in, it's like a circular graph. It looked a bit like an astrology chart or something. And so when I did mine, it came out at 0. So it said no need.
You're off the scale, Steve.
No need for rules and supervision.
Yeah,
we'll buck the system.
Yeah, we'll actively resist.
Do this, that, and the other. You see, and so I was like, oh, okay, and which is why I work for myself now. And then
I want to do one of those. See if I can beat your score.
But what we no, it doesn't go any long. And the other one I got scored naught on was interesting in details.
Oh dear,
scored yeah. naught. You see,
yes.
So the combination of those two things meant that when I was giving – this was years and years ago before I learned NLP – when I was giving instructions to my staff, so the staff I had were health and – I'm embarrassed about this – health and safety,
yeah.
The stores, and payroll.
All very detailed,
yeah. And there were 9 people, right? And so I'd say, oh, you know, could you give me an absentee report, please? And they go, yeah, yeah. And then they'd be like, well, do you want it broken down into male and female? I go, yeah. It's like, how long do you want it over? And all these details, you see. So I'd have to give them all these details. And they'd be queuing up at the door asking me all these questions. And then I'd think, what's wrong with them? Because, you know, for me, if somebody says to me, Stephanie, can you do this? I'd go, yeah. And off I'd go and do it. I wouldn't say, well, when do you want it by? Well, I might say, when do you want it by? I wouldn't say, you know, ask them a whole lot of details. I'd just do it. And so because that's how I operate, that's how I treated them. So, you know, we're always taught to treat people as you want to be treated.
Yeah.
So I'd go, oh, you know, I'd ask them to do something and then they'd be at the door asking me questions about it. And I'm thinking, God, you know, because I thought if I gave them lots of details, they'd just get fed up and pissed off, you know, because that's how I'd get it.
Yep. Yeah, don't insult me.
Yeah, exactly, by giving me all that. So then after a while I thought, oh, I might get them to do this work styles profile. And so on a scale of 1 to 9, so rules and supervision, mine was 0. They were between 5 and 9.
Right.
And on the liking for detail, they're between 2, which is still quite high, you know, the difference on each scale, to 7. And I looked at this thing and I thought, oh, my God, I am the worst boss in the world. I've been giving them all these vague instructions and they need details and they need – and it was like, oh, my God. And I thought I was just the best boss because I was treating them like I treated myself.
Yeah.
So I learned that you can't treat people as you want to be treated. You have to treat people as they want to be treated, which or, in this case to, was completely different from me, you know.
Yeah, or need to be treated.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's – and this – I keep coming back to politics on this as well, not because I want to talk about politics. I want to talk about the confusions that happen in politics. Like, I often heard journalists say, "Oh, New Zealanders like strong leadership," and I was thinking, "What a load of bollocks that is!"
Do we need leading?
Well, but that was me, right? I was like, I don't need leading. I'm perfectly capable of making my own decisions.
Exactly.
But then I watched through COVID, and the quality of the leadership had a lot to do with how soothed people were. There were people who were desperately wanted to see someone leading, competent, visibly competent, leading the country. A lot of people really, really wanted to see that.
Yeah, I wanted to see it as well.
It would have been nice. No, yeah. No, we're not making political jokes. But it made me realize, it was that experience that made me realize that a lot of people do want to see someone visibly in charge. And in a lot of ways, And in some ways, it doesn't matter. It's more important that they appear to be in charge than they're actually competent.
Mm.
That they feel secure when they're out there striding ahead.
It's basically that they can use good language and look confident.
For a politician, very important. Yeah. But for me, that was like a turnoff because I'm like, oh, who do you think you are? You know, we don't. We're not children. We don't need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was my kind of response to it. Mm. So here I am. I'm independent in my job, in my life. And it took a while. It took me a long time to figure or to get there. But, very important.
Anyway.
But that's – I just – the more I think about it, like a lot of the political debates or not, the political divides are based on values. And like you keep telling us, the values are not – we're not always conscious of them.
No.
And we've talked off the air about how the two main political parties, their economic policies are pretty similar.
Mm.
But people way more similar than you'd think from watching supporters how how intensely they feel about usually the party they don't like. They're not that attached to the party they do like. They just really don't like those other guys.
Right, right. So they just go for the lesser of two evils kind
of thing. the less hated party, the ones that they kind of vibe with.
Mm.
You know, and it's those vibes that and values comes into it, and that nobody's – not a lot of us are voting on actual real issues. We're voting on –
on values.
Values. And but we don't know.
On the key words, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's like people need to be able to drill down and say, well, what does that actually mean?
Have you tried doing that with a politician?
No, because I go into a trance just listening to them.
Yeah, trying to get them to – but yeah, but they've
– Or I want to kick the TV in.
Yeah, but they are very skilled at using the words that seem to attach to people's values, like standards. We believe in standards.
Mm.
Okay, cool.
Mm. What standards?
Years ago,
I thought I'd love to be on TV. I'd love to be an interviewer because I'd get these people in knots with the questions they're asking me now.
Well, there are interviewers who do that. I looked on TikTok the other day for some reason, and there was people clipping bits out of interviews from like Māori TV and from political shows that are on because they don't no longer like the incisive political interviewers exist. They're just not on prime time anymore.
Right.
But there's little clips of people like Jack Tame and Mihi Forbes, Jackson, like all really, really intelligent people asking thoughtful questions.
Mm.
And they exist, but we don't see them because they're not on prime time. Find them online, little clips somewhere. So, yeah, I just mentioned that.
It's important because if we can drill down, then you get a real understanding of what they're talking about because it's just too vague to just talk about those value words.
And I think actually – again,
and assume that we all understand the same by whatever that word is.
And there's a lot of people now looking forward to watching them attempt to form the coalition because everyone can see that David Seymour and Winston Peters have very different values.
Mm.
Like that's readily, really apparent to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And people are either thinking it's going to be funny watching them to try and get organised or worrying watching them trying to get organised, but everyone knows it's not going to be easy.
Mm. So, well, you see, the thing is, if it was me, the first thing I'd do is like, okay, what's going to be our agreed values for this coalition?
Yeah.
And what's that going to look like and sound like and feel like and why is it important? And do that for the three groups getting together. They won't do it, of course.
No, it'll be power.
But I'll volunteer if they need some help.
It'll be power and manipulation probably that decides it. But okay. All right, so there you go, values, yeah. Yeah, I'm starting to think they're more and more important, but they're such vague things at times.
Well, the other thing is that they, you know, they are at the centre of conflict. So when people have different values, there's conflict. On the opposite side of the coin, when people have similar values, it's a basis for harmony.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are drawn to each other when they have similar values, even though they might not know what they are. They can pick them up from behaviours and talking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's a hierarchy, so some are more important than others. And they can, you know, like I mentioned before, if somebody's lost their job through redundancy, then, you know, often security might go up to the top when they're... you know, when they're maybe single, it might be money might be at the top, but then later on, or when they've got a young family, money might be at the top, but when they're, you know, maybe, you know, all settled in the house and everything, it might drop down to number five or might drop off the list altogether.
Right.
So, you know, all of those things can vary and it's important to kind of look at them. I usually look at mine every 18 months or 2 years, just see if the order's changed or if there's another one sort of appeared somewhere. that maybe I wasn't aware because we are evolving creatures. It's not like everything stays static for the whole of our lives, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Steph, thank you for coming in.
Oh,
folks,
welcome.
We've been talking to Stephanie Philp. If you got this halfway through, we're going to podcast the interview on ragnarradio.com. Be there later this morning if I'm organised and get everything done in time.
It depends on your standards, doesn't it?
My standards. I don't have standards aren't that high in this radio station. I've got to be honest. Maybe that's why it's a trigger for me, that word. Standards. Anyway, moving on. Thank you for coming in, Steph.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, that's the end of the show for the day. We'll see you all again tomorrow morning.